All right, we are back with you here on 1320 WARA. 75 degrees, clear skies overhead. Meteorologist Jim Corbin is now joining us live in studio. Hey, Jim, how you doing today?
All right, Dom. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you again.
Nice ride down Richardson Avenue.
Richardson Avenue. There you go. Light traffic on that?
Oh, area? Yeah. Although I passed, there was one... a little construction site going on. They were working on a pole and right on the Mansfield Norton line there, and so there was a police officer there making his $47 an hour,
exactly,
or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Whatever. I know, you know, Paul Healy actually makes a big thing of that, but no. Other than that, yeah, no light traffic for the most part. Actually, you mentioned on one of your newscasts within the last couple of hours that issue in Mansfield about Crignally, who's the guy who's put up some condos buildings in
that
there.
That building, yeah.
Rumford 214, if you've ever been downtown, right by the laundromat that we've had, you know, in the past talked about. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, though, that is literally about 100 yards from where I am, and it's too bad there was a barbershop there, but apparently they have issues with that. But I was thinking, wait a minute, where have I seen that? Yeah, that's right up the street, literally. And this guy, he's putting everything up because it's right around the train station there in Mansfield. Just like, you know, some of the construction that's gone on here in Attleboro, with Renaissance Place or whatever, and the one that's going to be across the street. So I think you're starting to see these developments, and again, we're not talking about weather at the moment, but these developments right near all the train stations, because that's where people sometimes want to live. They don't want to drive. They're sick of the travel. I mean, I'm bringing this up because you talk about traveling, and I think you're going to see more of this train station stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if something comes up, although I don't know exactly where the land would be, near the South Attleboro train station. You know, if there's an open lot, you know, maybe there'll be something, you know, not too far from where I used to live on George I Drive. But you know, it's interesting how you're seeing a lot of this around the train stations here in Bristol County, and probably the same thing I think in Pawtucket. They were thinking of, weren't they, in the last few years, thinking of putting in some sort of either a station or some sort of residential development. And again, because I think a lot of people are just, over the years, tired of the traffic and, you know, 95. We were just talking off air about an accident not far from where you live in. The thing about it is, and I've talked about it over the years, and I've heard people tell me about it, when you're in Providence coming north on 95, a lot of times there's traffic, and then you go through the S-curves, and it slows down, and, oh, you kind of have to turn, and, you know, back, left, right. So once people hit the Attleboro line, or just after it, on 95, right by the Home Depot exit there, they want to accelerate. And I think that, and they accelerate it fast, going right up into North Attleboro, and I think that's part of the reason why you see a lot of accidents on that stretch of 95. People are, and I'm not making excuses, it shouldn't happen, but, you know, I have always thought, you know, as someone who lived, again, in South Attleboro for about 6-7 years, and you would, I think, agree, you have a lot of accidents coming out of Attleboro. And I think part of it is, okay, yeah, a lot of it is people aren't looking, maybe they're texting, whatever. But they're also tired of going maybe half an hour through downtown Providence and then the S-curves in Pawtucket. And so finally they get that straightaway and they accelerate.
Open road comes
open road. And so, and I'll never forget that accident. You know, in the late 1990s, 2000, a little ways up on the right where several family was killed. And remember, they had a memorial there. I want to say they put up a little fence. They went off the road near. And again, I don't be talking about morbid accidents, but I'm bringing this up just because of the traveling and what happened this morning with the, you know, rubbernecking and accidents. But this accident happened right about in North Attleboro, not far from the overhead wires that go over 95. Uh-huh. Remember, then there were flowers. There was a memorial there.
Yeah.
Then they put up a temporary, you know, well, a guardrail because they went down into somebody's yard.
Right.
And again,
that's
another one of these accidents. And again, you're talking accidents.
Yeah,
but
that was the one that I'm pretty sure that's the one that they went almost to the person's yard.
Yeah.
Where was I think it was on 152, I think, by that gas station that's up there.
Okay.
That was another accident that I remember, but remember another one that was up on the
95 North, not far from, as you're kind of going up a hill, just before the overhead wires, where in the last couple of years they put a sign up for, because I think a truck might have hit one. So, but,
yeah,
you know, it's not the reason isn't 100% that it's people accelerating, but I think part of it is it's the first straightaway. Think about it. When you're going through Providence on 95 North, coming out of Warwick, and again, you know, I dealt with it. It's a lot of Providence, one of the windiest stretches of 95. So once people get just about past the Home Depot exit here in Attleboro, they want to just accelerate fast, and sometimes it gets them into trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree with you, because I do know where the area you're talking about now is. And as you go into Rhode Island, you get past the Iway Bridge over there, and you just, you know, just they fly through those winding areas, you know, by Rhode Island Hospital, and then they just keep going. And then that's one reason there's not as many accidents on 295, because 295 is more of a straightaway, you know.
Yeah.
495, it's a little dangerous on 495. I don't like to go on 495 because you got a lot more truckers on that roadway.
That's it, yeah. I was on that 495 the other day up in Milford, getting my haircut. Mm-hmm. You see, I have kind of short hair. But anyway, I'd say every more trucks than cars I was passing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
At times, you know, you're hemmed in by trucks and in the middle lane on 495. I mean, it's an overall not a bad road in terms of it's
right, straight.
But and like you said, 295 as well. I think 295, the one bad spot is right where it merges with 95, where you have that sharp turn to get on. And a lot of accidents either there getting on, say, 95 North, or the people that get going down 95 to get on 295, I think there was an accident a few months ago there, a truck spilled over and that kind of thing. But again, we're all bringing this up because of what happened, I think, this morning more than anything else. I mean, it's the weather is beautiful, you know.
Exactly.
And what are you showing for dew point right now?
Dew point says 66 right now.
It's starting to come down. Not a drastic change. That's the key I've said for the last few days. But we are in for a somewhat less humid weekend, which is certainly the good news. The only fly in the ointment, I know that's a cliche, whatever, but maybe late tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, there could be a brief shower, and I know you're a little concerned about it with the wedding that you're doing, but it shouldn't be. They're under a tent, it's not like we're going to be, you know, there's going to be severe weather, 60-mile-an-hour winds or heavy downpours and everything like that. So that's really about the only rain possible until probably Tuesday.
Yeah, when we're under a tent over at Country Gardens, it's not a big deal. I mean, I know a few weeks ago or about a month ago, there was another wedding there that we were doing, and I remember it was really coming down for about 10 minutes or so, and the bride and groom went outside. And this happened just before 10 o'clock, and
at night.
Yeah, and they had gone out. They had gone out because they wanted to. You know, they wanted to do kind of a last hurrah. So what they did is they took off their shoes and then just went out for about 5 or 10 minutes
in the middle of the rain.
And then they came in because that was the end of the night. It was just before 10 o'clock. I had done their last dance. Because I do their last dance about 10 minutes before, and right before I did that, they went outside and then they came in and they were soaked, but they had a great time anyways.
And then when
they were getting ready to leave, it was just about 10 o'clock. What'd they do again? They went back out there and they said, it stopped raining, because it stopped raining for a few minutes. And then about 10:30, when everybody was already gone, it has already started. And that's when we were cleaning up everything. But you know, that's with me, I'm inside, so I don't have to worry about it. You know, everybody else is.
Yeah, the real worry is if there's like lightning in the area,
right,
where you get electrical equipment and things like that. Mm. That's about the only. And as we've been talking about the last few weeks, Dom, you know, there has been not a lot of bad, real severe weather around here. The people that have taken the hit is out in the Midwest. And again, that's how weather patterns set up. Usually if it's hot in one location, the jet stream pattern means it's going to be much cooler to the west or east. And the same thing has happened this summer. Yeah, there have been, and was it yesterday was the anniversary of the Revere tornado.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You remember that? Again, that was just Revere, I think, or maybe a little part of Chelsea or whatever. But the point being that it's been overall, I think, a really good summer for most, not just outdoor activities, like you do weddings or concerts or things like that, but just the actual comfort. And so when we had a day like yesterday, which is fairly rare this summer, unlike two summers ago, it affects people more. And you were talking about the police officer that was out for like almost 12 hours, you know, at the site. That must have been a little tough for him, although, again, you know, the pay probably. No, but anyway. But he had his ice, you said, around his neck or whatever.
For a while,
and stuff
he did.
Like that.
Yes, he did.
So, and again, but yesterday was a rare day this summer, as opposed to two summers ago. We're at this after a while, we were getting used to like 97, 98 degrees, whereas this summer, still, like last summer almost, we have not really had temperatures much above 90 degrees. We've had like 91, 92 here and there. Not to put down that that's not hot, but it's not like what we oftentimes can get. And in fact, we are seeing signs that next week, beginning Wednesday, as I've been saying for the last few days, it looks like we're going to get into a pattern of near or below average temperatures, which is not necessarily a good thing for some in the summertime. If you're someone who likes to go to the beach, well, you know, you might say, well, if I'm going to go to the beach today, it's going to be only in the 70s. Well, you still probably will if that's what you were thinking of doing. But other situations where people like that policeman yesterday, he said it was out for almost 12 hours. Later next week would probably be a much more comfortable situation to be out for many hours outside, for doing anything outside, whether you have to trim the bushes, maybe do the hedges or what have you. Later next week really looks good for that. The only fly in the ointment, here I said it twice now.
I say that a lot myself.
I know, you get me. Maybe that's where I'm getting it from. I'm surprised you haven't started saying relative, which I say often, and not just relative humidity. But it looks like, we have a pattern change coming up, and that'll be interesting to see because as it tips the other way, the complaints, in a sort of joking way, sometimes roll in where people will say, no, it's summertime. It's supposed to be in the 90s and 80s, and it might, in next week late, could be just in the 70s, and maybe with a little bit of rain here and there, which would be good for the lawns and gardens, but obviously for outdoor activities, including maybe jumping in the pool, although I've always thought, you know, if you're in the pool, if it's raining, what's the big deal?
Yeah,
if there's
lightning
again is another thing. But if it's just a rain shower and you're already getting wet in the pool, then what's the big deal?
You know? I know. You see that all the time. Like, you know, I guess they don't want, if they're in the pool, they don't want it to be on top of them. You know, like, oh, it's starting to rain again. You know, yeah. Let's get out of the pool now.
Well, and again, when you're in a pool or a lake, like a falls pond or whatever, you want to, you generally like to have the sun out because it almost feels more like a summery situation as opposed to, well, it's still 80 degrees and I'm in the pool and I'm already wet and it's raining. It doesn't maybe necessarily psychologically feel as good or look as good because, oh, it's cloudy and it's raining, you know, but that's the way it goes.
So this morning, a nice area to see the full moon out this morning.
I did catch it. I didn't catch it just before it set, but about, I want to say it was 3 a.m. I woke up briefly and I could see out my window faces southwest and I could see that moon coming in and I went back to sleep. I had just woken up for whatever reason, but I could see the moon coming in and the full thunder moon, the second full moon this month. As I always say, a lot of things, it's more semantics than anything else. It doesn't mean it's a weird moon. It's just the fact that calendar-wise, there was one earlier this month and because the moon phase from full to full is usually about 29 days. You have to fit it in just right, just at the beginning of the month and right at the end of the month. So the next one will be, I think, later in 2017. I think you had mentioned it as well a little while ago. But the full thunder moon, and the next one is the full sturgeon moon, which are some sort of like a fish. And that'll be the August 29th.
Yeah, and you know, it was nice and bright. I know tonight, actually, we're going to a little backyard cookout at my stepson's house tonight. So probably be outside, probably start seeing the moon out there.
Oh, should be fine. Yeah, the moon is officially full today. I don't remember the exact time today, but if the day of the full moon, you can get, that means that the moon will be rising just as the sun sets. So probably, as we talk about, nobody generally has a flat horizon. So I would say by around 9 o'clock this evening, as it's just about getting dark, you'll see that moon rising in the east-southeast. You talked about a low moon. This is still the time of year where the full moon is always opposite the sun. So if the sun is high in the sky like it is now, the full moon will always be going low in the sky. And the opposite, of course, is in the wintertime when the sun is low in the sky. The full moon is opposite it. So the full moon in the wintertime is that it's in those long nights where the full moon is way up high in the sky like the sun is in the summertime. So it'll be another probably a nice night for viewing that full thunder moon.
You know what I like to see when it is a full moon, it's the it's when it, you know, what do you call it when it's like that huge, you know, it's lower to the ground almost to the horizon, and it's it's a more bright and low moon that you see it up there.
Well, that's what we have now. That's what you probably saw this morning.
Right. Yeah.
Where'd you see it this morning?
Well, I saw it in the southwest. In the west. Now I've seen it before higher up in the east. And it was low.
That was probably in the winter or somewhere.
Yes, it was in the winter. It was, and you could see it like over the ramps of 95 or something like that. You could see it. And it was trying. That huge ball, and it was low, but it was that huge bright that you could see it from all over the place.
Yeah, I mean this again. We're still relatively. Oh, there's the word. But we're still relatively long days, and so the sun is still very high in the sky, so whenever you're around a full moon. Now, you'll also notice that when the moon is like a little sliver moon, mm-hmm. it's usually different than the full moon in terms of the height of it this time of the year, because the sliver moon is always near the sun, mm-hmm. Whether it's in the early morning or that sliver moon, the little waxing crescent that's just after sunset that we had, like 10 days ago, whatever it was, that'll always be near the sun. Where's the sun this time of the year? High in the sky. So when the moon is near the sun this time of the year, it's high in the sky. When it's away from the sun, which the full moon is completely opposite, that's why it's low in the sky. Mm-hmm. The other thing is when you're looking at the moon this time of the year, you're looking at it, again, at a low angle. So you're looking at it through a thicker air blanket, again, as we've talked about before. So think about it. You're looking at it, whatever the elevation is, if it's low, fairly low in the sky, it's going through, you're looking through thicker air, and therefore it's going to usually have more of a yellowish or orangey tinge, and especially if you have a little bit of haze like we did for a while last evening. So, whereas in the wintertime, when the air is much more cleaner, drier, it might be bitter cold, but those long nights where the moon is up high in the sky, it's going through a thinner air blanket, and so that's why in the wintertime, the moon is usually almost always white, whereas in the summertime, mm-hmm. it has that yellowish, not always, I mean, it can be a nice clear, but usually it's more yellowish-orangey moon, because it's not only dealing with more haze and humidity in the summertime, but it's also going through, you're looking at it through a thicker air blanket. Same thing with the sun, when the sun sets. In the summertime, you usually have more hazy-looking sunsets than you do in the wintertime.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, we are here with meteorologist Jim Corbin. If you'd like to ask him a question or two, our phone lines are open at 508-222-1320. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more with Jim coming your way right here on AM 1320.
The Attleboro Elks, located on South Main Street, will hold its annual three-day barbecue from Friday, July 31st, through Sunday, August the 2nd. This summer event has all the traditional makings for a great time in the community, marked with lots of food, music by local talent, and of course you. For more information, feel free to call the Elks at 508-222-5502.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
What is that?
Oh, that? It's my time machine.
Does it work?
Sure. Just hit this button.
Whoa, dinosaurs. Cool.
Or we can go here.
Hey, that's Napoleon.
Oui.
Or we can go to the future.
Wow, hey, you have this nice house. Do I have a nice house?
No, you didn't save any money. Always spent it on vacations and stuff.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and correct that bad habit.
Yep.
Okay, the time machine is not real, but the saving thing is. Get in the habit of putting some of your money in savings each week through a 401k, savings account, or financial investments. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy tips on saving, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org. What does this crazy little button do?
No! This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Redcoats and Rebels, coined as the largest military reenactment in New England, is on the agenda at Old Surbridge Village on Saturday, August 1st and Sunday, August 2nd. The village is transformed into a military camp from the time of the War for Independence for this event. There will be nearly 1,000 soldiers on hand for mock battles, skirmishes, cannon demonstrations, and so much more. For more information, call 1-800-733-1830.
All right, 9:22 on this Friday morning. We've got 76 degrees currently outside our studios, and we want to welcome everyone out there listening in online as well at WARARadio.com, as well as our faithful listeners that are always on the air with us. We have meteorologist Jim Corbin live in studio with us until 10 o'clock, and if you'd like to give him a call or so, you can. Of course, our lines are open at 508-222-1320. We've actually had some interesting warm and hot weather this week as well. As you said, as we get into the month of August already tomorrow, you said next week down the line, you're going to have probably more comfortable weather.
It looks like it. Now, it may not be completely rain-free either, but it's all in the wind direction this time of the year. I can't stress it enough, especially more actually earlier in the summer. But if we start to develop east-northeast winds with low pressure to our south, then we're going to have some days that may not get above 70 or 75 later next week or even next weekend. I saw, actually, I was looking just before I came in, some long range for next weekend, not this weekend, a possible chilly rains. Now, again, that's, over a week out. So as I always say, don't worry about it at the moment. If you have an event that might take 2-3 hours, 9 or 10 days from now, we could be off by a few hours, and that's going to make the big difference. But yeah, the month of August is especially known for its humidity. Wow. Even though the actual air temperatures drop off just slightly, August is known for its humidity, and therefore usually it's warmer at night. So you have a lot of these hot nights in August, even though the days are starting now to get shorter. And that's an issue with the month of August. By the way, a big anniversary coming up, the 40th anniversary coming up this Sunday, August 2nd, 1975. And you remember what that is?
What date was it now?
August 2nd, 1975.
1975.
August. I always put him to...
I know, really. August 2nd, 1995.
75.
75. Offhand, I'm not... 75. Probably
Mount Washington. I was on Mount Washington that day with my brother.
I'm trying to think. Did we have...
The hottest day of the 20th century.
Is that what it was?
Yes, here in New England.
Is that what it was?
104 degrees.
Oh, my God.
That was the air temperature, and feel-like temperature was about 115. That was called Hot Saturday, August 2nd, 1975, 40th anniversary coming up. And, again, that's early, first couple of days of August. But after about mid-August, we start to drop in temperature noticeably, but we keep the humidity.
Huh. All right. Well, that's interesting. And in fact, this morning when I was, we'll be with you in a second, Carla, when I was like 6 o'clock this morning, 5:30, 6 o'clock, I was looking at the Mount Washington Observatory. It was already nice and clear up there at that time of the morning. It was beautiful up there. And there's already some people already up there now. Right before you came in, I saw a couple of people already up there.
People taking advantage of it. You don't always have a lot of sunshine early in the morning on Mount Washington.
No, not for sure. That's for sure. All right. Good morning.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hey, there he is. How you doing?
Well, hey, we're just back here for a day, but we're heading back to the country in Connecticut. And
this is Larry from Pawtucket.
Yes, hello, Larry.
Oh, you have an excellent memory, Don. Gee, that's excellent memory. Seeing you have the ace there, Mr. Jim, a curiosity, maybe you can mention it. What is the best app for weather forecasting and the radar and all that for a tablet? Now, I've put in the Weather Channel.
Yep.
And that shows you the direction that the storm is going and all. But is there a better one?
Well, I'm not big on electronics in terms of apps, although I do have something on my computer. I don't know how it got there. But a lot of the television stations have good stuff. If you go on their websites, channels 10, 12, 6, or in Boston, 4, 5, 25, channel 10, I mean, what do you call it? Channel
Fox
25, whatever. You can also go on. There's also Weather Underground, which is a great site. If you were to just Google Weather Underground, you'll get a lot of information there.
That's what we use here at the studio, yeah.
Weather Underground, with small letters, although it probably does work with capital letters too, whatever. But Weather Underground is a good one, and you can get information information from all weather locations, even in probably in eastern Connecticut. I'm sure there are people that are on that where you can find the weather that's going on there. And I think you said in the past you're out there near Thompson? Sweden or
Woodstock?
Woodstock. Okay, Woodstock. Beautiful, beautiful town. And so you go on. I bet if you went on Weather Underground, and then mm-hmm. you would find some information about the weather going on in eastern, northeastern Connecticut, as well as the Pawtucket area. That's a great site, Weather Underground. I recommend it highly.
I've tried going on Hartford Channel 3, WTIC, yep. and they've got a good weather, map, but it's not like what you see on TV, you know,
yeah.
with the weatherman on, you know, with the lightning strikes and... I haven't seen a site that showed me the lightning strike.
There are sites you can go on. I can't, even though I have it in my repertoire, you can see lightning live going on. Well, literally, it's lightning within a few seconds. In other words, the other day when we had some thunderstorms, I was on that site, and you could see the lightning. What happens is on this particular site, it's little crosshairs where the lightning is, and suddenly a white circle comes out from it. That means that's the lightning. And sure enough, about 5 seconds later, I heard the boom.
Is it lightning? Is it lightningmaps.org?
You can have there's several of them.
Yeah.
Lightning. Okay.
But
lightning maps, Dominic. Is that lightning
yeah, I'm
maps?
Just looking online. It says lightningmaps.org has real time lightning maps as well.
Oh gee.
And
but
you can
it's
get
really
them, and
interesting.
You can, and you have if you. I know again. If you have some sort of an elaborate tablet or whatever, you can get them on there. I'm usually looking at it from a desktop screen, but you can get them. So you could be, say, out in the middle of nowhere there in eastern Connecticut, north. I don't mm-hmm. mean to say that negative way, but you could be out by your, I think you said you have a cabin out there?
Yes, it's
something like
co-op
that.
Campground.
Yeah. Well, you could be there, and if you set it up right, you could use your tablet. You could get lightning. So if you're say out by maybe a local pond or lake there, and you're like, "Ooh, I'm starting to hear some thunder and lightning in the distance." Obviously, seeing lightning and hearing, mm-hmm. you can go on that tablet and on that particular site, and you can see the live lightning. And you say, "Oh, wow, this is now in west of here by 10 miles. I better start heading home or whatever." So there are sites you can do. It's amazing, and the lightning detectors are amazing. They've only been really big in the last. Really, 5 to 10 years, whereas satellite and radar obviously has been around much longer.
Well, you know, I'm going to complain about TV stations, you know, the
yep.
weathermen.
Yep.
It seems like beyond Burrillville, there's no man's land, except yeah. for Channel 10, uh-huh. which he, checkmark, puts Woodstock. He's got Sturbridge. He must have a spotter out there in Woodstock and Sturbridge.
Yep.
But the others, it seems like... if you look at the radius, they go so much further up to Plymouth than they do from the transmitter, let's say, or from Providence. Out west is Burrillville. And how far is that? Willimantic, they're always standing in front of Willimantic.
Yeah,
you have to be able to catch that temperature.
Well, they have to be usually standing, as someone who's done it over the years of television. You
yeah.
have to you can step out of the shot, but you also have to be at least in the shot on occasion. And so my guess is what's happening is that we've got a situation where they're going to stand in front of the less populated location. I know that sounds sort of biased, but that's probably why. And I know, for example, Channel 4 in Boston is cut off on the left. As you're watching the screen, there's no temperatures on their regular map in Connecticut. It's cut off from Providence up to Worcester. So they can stand in the shot where there aren't any temperatures. So they can't, no one can call up and say, "Well, you're blocking that temperature," because they don't have the temperatures of places to the west of Boston, well to the west, like west of Worcester, west of Providence. And that's the map where they use the main cities, not the one that's clustered with a lot of them. So again, I understand it. What it is, I think eastern Connecticut, and I mentioned Willimantic a lot, so I know that area. I'm just good with geography. I'm not trying to toot my horn by saying that, but I've been there as well. You got all those places there, Putnam and all that. That area is kind of like a bit of a no man's land. It's kind of far east from the Hartford and Springfield situation, the TV stations mm-hmm. there, and it's far enough west from Boston. Now, I agree with you that the Providence station should be more into it, and some of them are, at least in eastern Connecticut. When I was on all the Providence stations, I always had some of the action going on in eastern Connecticut, because obviously you can get most of the Providence stations there, unless you're in like a valley or something.
We have an antenna and we pick up Providence.
So you get it.
And pick up Hartford.
Yeah, and so you pick up what better, Hartford or Providence?
Oh, I can't even pick up Hartford. It's okay. Providence.
Yeah. Well, as you know, Connecticut is obviously there's hilly terrain there, and a lot of the hills run north-south. So when you're looking east-west, and you're in a low spot, that's why I asked, if you look at the geography of most of Connecticut, all the hills are running roughly north-south. And so if you're in a valley, you can shoot north or south, and you'll get better reception than you would east-west. Then once you get into Rhode Island, of course, you've got Jeremoth Hill or Jeromoth Hill, however you want to describe it.
812 feet high.
There you go. And then if you look at Rhode Island as well, that's obviously the highest point in Rhode Island. And then everything generally slopes down into Providence. But although you do have a couple of other hills there that go back up there in eastern part of Foster. I can't remember the name of the hill. But the point being that Connecticut is a part of the reason why there's not a main highway that runs east-west in Connecticut. It would be very costly to have a major highway through Connecticut because they'd be cutting through the geographical, you know, hills. As you see, all the highways around the area, a lot of it is rock on the side where they did have to cut through. If you built a major highway in Connecticut, and I know there's Route 6 and 44 and a few others, whatever, but they're not major highways. It would be very costly. And that's part of the reason, I think, why Hartford gets a tough name from this area, because it's not easy to get to.
No.
But it's
true. The hills, the first highest hill, we're on this trip all the time, back and forth, is the Blackstone Valley watershed goes into Douglas and Webster, right at there, Route 16. That's the highest point for that whole area, and that's a range that comes down into Burrville. And after that, the other side, coming down to the Webster side, ends up into the Quinebaug River. So that's a main hill. You know, it's not a big mountain, but it's a hill separated from the Blackstone Valley watershed to Quinebaug. But it is tough. We have a hill right near where we are, and I can't even shoot it over the hill. You can't.
So yeah, that's the thing. And so when you leave Pawtucket and head out towards your location there in Connecticut, the whole route is up and down.
The city of Attleboro.
And again, it's not the worst, I'm sure, trip ever. I mean, I've done it a few times, having to go out there. I remember being at a wedding. I think it was, what's the next town next to Woodstock?
Well, Thompson is one this side, then it's Woodstock. The other side is Union, Webster, Dudley, Southridge.
Yeah, but in Connecticut, though, because I was at a wedding.
Putnam is south of Woodstock.
Well, somewhere about 20 years ago, I remember we had a wedding, and it was beautiful. It was a nice white church there and everything else. But I remember going out there and, you know, for some reason, instead of taking the Mass Pike, because I was in the Boston area, we went through Providence and then took Route 6 or whatever, and it was just up and down, and... You know, it's not an easy, it's nice and scenic, don't get me wrong, but it's a lot of accidents on that Route 6 stretch there. And what is it? What's the stretch there? Right up the Connecticut line where it goes down the steep hill, right? I remember a few years ago there was a bad accident there.
Near Rhode Island?
Near the Rhode Island line there. There's a
Cucumber
state park.
Cucumber Hill Road.
And then what was the state park I remember being at? We used to, when I lived in Bellingham, Pulaski, I think it's called.
Pulaski. Well, that's a Rhode Island park.
Yeah, but it's right on the border. It's right on the border with Connecticut, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And it's beautiful country, but again, the topography and the fact that there's not as much people, not as many people living there, to get back to your original point, is why Providence, although I think Providence stations should have more of it, but why you don't hear much of it out of the Boston stations, and you don't hear much of it out of the Hartford stations, just because of the fact that it's kind of in the middle of
no man's land.
Yeah, no man's land, and that's not to put it down. I'm just saying that's what it is, and that's probably why you like to go out there, right, to get away from it all.
True. There's 9 working dairy farms in Woodstock. You know, the population is 6,000 people for 60 square miles.
Wow.
That's the size of Woodstock. So it's just beautiful area.
And you're heading back out there soon?
It's God and it's nature up there, and we come here just to regroup for a day or two, but then we're going back.
Yeah.
It closes November 1st.
Oh, wow, so you have many months to go. That's great.
Oh, yeah, there's no transients. We all board into the site.
And let me ask you, and I think you'll say yes, the thunderstorms are worse there than here.
Yes. And because of these little hills you were talking about, it kind of rumbles. You know, you're rumbling. It's either echoes or so. But that's why now it's our new toy is a tablet. And seeing where they're going, you know, they show you where the track is going for the storm.
Yep.
We have an idea if it's coming to us or it's going up the South Bridge or going down the south of Putnam.
And let me ask you one more time. Can you pronounce the name of the Indian name of
Webster Lake?
Lake Webster, yeah. Can you pronounce it?
My wife can say it. Oh, gee. Wait, hang on.
Lake Chagagagag, Minchagagag, Chabunagunjamog? That one?
That one there. I always
thought it was Chabunagungamog. But
yeah,
anyway.
Oh, no, there's 44 letters to it.
Yeah, it's like almost like anti-disestablishmentarianism, except maybe not quite as long. But, yeah, Lake Webster, one of the biggest lakes in that whole area, beautiful location there. But
21 miles of shoreline around the lake.
Well, have you ever been in it or been there? Or?
Oh, yes. I had family members that had a place there.
Oh, yeah, nice location. And it's kind of that's a little more easily accessible because it's not too far from 395.
It's true. 395, one exit, you go 2 miles. They just got a brand new Island Princess boat. It's a paddle wheel boat.
Oh, wow.
And it's a monster. And this thing here, they just got the okay to do it. It came in from Missouri, I think, and by water, the Mississippi and that. They came into Barrington. They drove it in Rhode Island up to Route 44, and at the state line, it got grounded for about a good month because the state police in Connecticut wouldn't allow it on the road.
Oh.
Because they have to, it's so big, they got to block it completely. They finally got the authority to do it. Then they went up to 395 and got off at 16 Indian Ranch. It just started recently. It's a big monster. It holds 150 people.
Yeah, check that out, that area. Yeah. I always
Indian
loved
it. Princess, they call it.
Indian Princess.
Indian Princess. And there's rides. They have scenic rides. And you can contract it, you know, if you want your own party. But that's something. If you go to the Indian Ranch website, they feature country music up there an awful lot.
Nice.
But another point there, Jim. I've enjoyed your shows with Miss Emily, with the weather reports. Not the reports, but the weather history.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, enjoyed those shows there. Sunday nights here in Rhode Island, it's 10:30. So we stay up late and watch that.
Okay, that's great.
Well, Jim, hey, okay. A pleasure speaking to you. And Dominic, I haven't spoken to you, but hoping all's well.
Everything's good with us, that's for sure.
Good. And what is a timetable for 1320 to expand a little bit?
I'm not sure yet. Our operations manager Jim Jones is trying to figure out as we speak. We're gonna try at some point. I'm not sure when. Maybe do a 24-hour clock. We're not sure. I mean, we're still on the air. The music starts just after 5 o'clock, and then I get on at 6, and then we go off at 10. But at some point, we're going to see if we can expand that a little bit more, maybe get some more hosts or some more music or whatever, more talk shows or whatever it is. But we'll see what happens. We're still in the talking stages, who knows? Maybe something will happen before the end of the summer. Who knows?
Well, hey, I wish you luck. It's a good venture for something local. You're not syndicated or things like that.
Exactly.
You got to crawl before you walk.
That's
and
for sure.
I remember way back when you used to sign off at 10 o'clock,
yep.
The Foxborough Company
yep.
would be the sponsor, and at 10 o'clock they'd always close off with the Lord's Prayer.
Yep, I know, exactly right.
You remember, that's a long time ago.
I remember that. When I actually started on the air, actually myself, on May 5th, 1984, we had just started with the music from Until Midnight. From 8 to midnight, we had oldies, and then right before that, we had that beautiful music from that we were playing until 10 o'clock with the from the Foxborough Company.
The Foxborough Company. Those were the days.
Yeah, you got that right.
Well, hey, okay, we've got to get going, put gas in the pack of lunch, put gas in the car and air in the tires to head up there. So you got to think Rhode Island, you know?
Of course, yes.
Of course. Hey, you take it easy, and good luck to both of you guys.
All right, Larry, you too. Thank you.
Bye, okay. Larry.
All right, there you go. There goes Larry. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got Jim Corbin in studio with us for a bit, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments. So don't you go changing, as Paul Healy likes to say.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backsplash. I want to be a bike that races around the
country.
When
I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up,
I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I
want to
be
a...
I
want
to be
a... I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Sow seeds of hope and enjoy a signature meal topped off by Dancing Under the Stars on Friday, August 21st from 6 to 10 p.m. at Attleboro Farms on Hickory Road in North Attleboro. This farm-to-table dinner is held in partnership with local growers and food artisans to benefit the Uncommon Ground Mentor Center. Get your tickets early at Attleboro Farms and at the Attleboro Farmers Market. For more information, call Uncommon Ground at 508-226-0801.
The Attleboro Elks, located on South Main Street, will hold its annual three-day barbecue from Friday, July 31st, through Sunday, August the 2nd. This summer event has all the traditional makings for a great time in the community, marked with lots of food, music by local talent, and of course you. For more information, feel free to call the Elks at 508-222-5502.
All right, we are back with you here on AM 1320. I want to thank Larry from Pawtucket, who's getting back up to Woodstock, Connecticut, in just a bit this morning with he and his wife. We have Jim Corbin back with us for a bit. I know that you'll be hanging on with Paul for a little bit.
For a little bit, yeah. I had a question of music you were playing. As I was, this was driving down Richardson Avenue.
Yeah.
You played the Hughes Corporation.
Yes.
Oh. Was that at the time considered, this is a new style of music. Mm-hmm. We're going to call it disco. Or was it years later thought of as the first, one of the first?
It was known as kind of one of the very first disco type of
music. The name disco comes from discotheques.
Right.
Oh, we're on the air.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, hello, Jim.
Hello, Paul.
I'll get out of the way then. Go back to it, gentlemen. I'm doing my plagiarism. Okay. I mean preparation. Right. And we're ready to go today, folks.
You are?
Yes.
We hope so.
Bushy tail.
No bells?
Few bells. Yes. All right.
Yeah. As he said, the song came out as discotheques as far as the studios, you know, the places where you would have the dance music playing at the clubs, basically.
So what would be a similar song? You said 1974?
74,
What would be another song around that time that was like that? Like, was there another? Well, like, I'm trying to, because I thought disco was more like 76, 77.
No, right? 76, 77, it was starting to get into the Saturday Night Fever stuff. 74, one of the first songs was the Hughes Corporation, Rock the Boat. One of the other ones that came out right after that, it was about four or five big songs back then. Fly Robin Fly by the Silver Convention.
Okay.
Also big back then. That was one of the earlier ones. And there's a few other ones in there as well. But
at that time, when those songs came out, how were people describing them? Here's some different type of music. In other words, was it called something at that time?
Well, back then,
or was it people like, what is this?
Well, they coined it back even in late 73, they were saying they were going to do some new type of music. And I remember this because I was in my first year of high school. Yeah, and they all of a sudden they started saying they're going to have some new type of music, and we're going to be calling it disco, because everything is on, at that time, was on a huge, a lot of them songs came out in a 12-inch single, album thing, and they were called disco, but they were, because they were trying to promote a lot of the clubs, the lounges, you know, like the Club 50, Studio 54 in New York,
yep.
They were doing a lot of that too, and the disco came through as discotheques, as, you know, dance clubs. I mean, discotheques.
What was the big one, for example, over the years in Providence that
In the Rhode Island area, one of the biggest one was Barry's Nightclub in Warwick.
Okay,
that was a huge. I went there.
Was that the one where the guy over the years he would like try to like singles dates and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah.
Is he still around?
No. You're talking about the guy that used to be on Oldies 103 who lived in.
He did. He had like a singles night. I never went to it.
No,
but
that
I remember
wasn't him. That wasn't him.
But it was Barry's, wasn't it?
There was a guy named Barry.
But it wasn't Barry's night.
No,
anything involved with Barry's Nightclub. Okay, I was just wondering.
No, it was Barry's Nightclub. nightclub was a different, and I can't remember his name because I actually knew him for a brief time. But anyways, yeah, Providence had some down the line, but Barry's was huge in the Warwick area, in the Rhode Island area. And yeah, the Rhode Island
where
area.
Is it, what is it there now?
Right now, Barry's is, you know, I haven't been down that area in so long. I'm not sure. It might be a convenience store. Who knows? I'm not even sure what
where
it is.
In Warwick is it? I'm just curious. I'm
not too far from the airport, right okay. around the corner from the airport road. It's on, what is it? It's not Sandy Lane. It's near the intersection of Airport Road, actually. Hoxie Four Corners. Hoxie Four Corners,
okay.
actually, down by that way. Near the old Almax, it used to be down there.
Okay, yeah, and that what's that supermarket there? The guy's name?
Dave's.
Dave's near there.
Yeah, near Dave's. Yeah, Dave's. Yeah, it's about a block up from that, going towards, like, if you were going back towards Cranston, Warwick Avenue. It was Warwick Avenue.
Okay, all right, I know.
Airport Road and Warwick Avenue. That's what it was.
But that's how. So disco, the name, the song, music disco started from discs. Like record, 12-inch records, and then discotheque was the actual building that you dance in.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, and then the polyester suits.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the funny thing in high school, because that was so popular, and I mentioned this to Paul a couple of weeks ago, that, yeah, I mean, a lot of us, I went to Catholic high school, I went to LaSalle, and we would have to wear suits and ties, but we also would wear leisure suits. We had the leisure suits too. I mean, those were huge back then in the mid 70s. That's when that came out. Those are the couple of the big songs. I mean, there was a lot of other ones.
And then what is it that, again, I might have asked this before, but as someone, I'm sure you would know it, what kind of was the demise of disco? Like, was it just, it just was a few years of a fad and then people just got sick of it? Or, I mean, you still hear the music on the air nowadays.
People say disco died. You know,
there was a burning of stuff in Chicago at a game. Remember?
That was some records and stuff.
But that wasn't the start of it, was it?
No, actually, no. I can't remember when it was, but they always say disco died. You know, they say that. Yeah, the fad disco died. Yeah, but
who's the guy that has the song about it? The rocker there, not Foreigner. Disco. He's putting down disco in his song.
Oh, God. It's not Disco Duck.
No.
That was Rick D's. I can't
Seeger?
Think.
Was it Seeger had a song about
rock
and roll?
Old-time rock and roll.
Yeah, and he puts down a little bit.
Yeah, he does, right, yes.
Is that around the time?
That song came out in the early 80s.
But that's the time that disco was pretty much gone,
right?
Well,
disco kind of faded out when the song Funky Town, Lips, Inc., that was 79. So they were starting to go down a little bit back then. Chic, I Want Your Love, Good Times. That was 78, 79. And surprisingly, YMCA was early 79 when that first came out. It was between 78 and 79. But disco, they always said the disco, you know, died in there, you know, and you had, you know, people had T-shirts that said disco sucks or disco died.
Yeah.
Disco, it did die. It really didn't die. To me, people will ask me, couples will say this, you know, when did disco die? Yeah, disco died around 79, but the disco beat just changed. It didn't really, you know, because Madonna came out in 83, she came out. She still had that type of beat. So the name disco died in 79, but it was
But isn't the definition of disco is the beat?
Yes, it's that dancing beat, basically,
It's easy to dance to, in a sense.
It actually is. You can dance. Yeah, I mean, last weekend, Saturday night, the bride and groom wanted to hear some Saturday Night Fever music. Played some of that. And, Mike, I mean, no word of a lie, there was about 120 people at the wedding. There had to have been at least 75 people, word of a lie, were on that dance floor. As soon as I played Saturday Night Fever songs, they were on the dance floor.
That song got the most dancers of any
Night
song?
Night Fever, and Staying Alive, and then Disco Inferno by the Tramps, and then I played Rock the Boat. 75 people stayed on the floor on the dance. And when I played How Deep Is Your Love from the Bee Gees, they stayed on the floor. And the only song that I played when I went, the last song I played in that set was YMCA, and everybody jumped off the except about 15 other people stayed because they wanted it. And then I ended up, you know, changing the beat just a little bit, you know, to regular stuff.
Is there a modern, like say in the last 5 or 10 years, song that could be considered disco that has come out, or is it, or even close to it?
I will say some new artists of doesn't really sound like disco, but the artist Black Eyed Peas, Pitbull, those artists within the last few years has that beat, but more of a Latin beat. Well, the Black Eyed Peas didn't have a Latin beat. Pitbull does. Late in the career, Madonna almost still had that sound as well.
What about the woman from South Florida there?
Gloria Estefan?
Yeah, did she have any of that?
Yeah, basically, the Miami Sound Machine.
Yeah,
Miami Sound Machine. That is a perfect example of in the early 80s, mid 80s, into the late 80s, they kept that beat going. And, you know, and you talk about this now, I don't know how we got into disco, about 25 years ago, I've been doing this for 37 years, so maybe about 25 years ago, around that, I was doing a wedding in Lincoln at a country club, and the couple's family were from Vietnam and Cambodia, Laos, and stuff in those areas, and I had gone to meet them, and I met with the parents as well, mm-hmm. and they said... And they gave me all the names and stuff like that. Like, okay, that was one of the only weddings that I have done. Six, it was a six-hour wedding. It was 6 to midnight.
Wow.
Almost 95% of all the songs I played was disco.
Really?
Yes, including Cocktail Hour. Cocktail Hour was the How Deep Is Your Love, the early stuff. Because I had played that because the parents and the grandparents were from there. I'm saying now this
from
is 25.
Where? From?
They were from the Vietnam area. And that they said,
why, are you saying that the disco was big in Vietnam?
Back then, yes. Even really? Back then, 20, 25 years ago, they were still listening to it. The grandfather was 79 years old. He has since passed on, of course, because I actually, they email me every once in a while, every year for Christmas, they email me. The grandfather passed away about 10 years ago, and the grandfather was so funny because he says, you could say our names correctly because I phonetically did them.
Yeah.
You know, the last name was NG, you know, Nyung, and some other names that they had. But the funny thing is the grandfather said, you really did that well. And I asked him, I says, because he actually came in from that area like within a year prior. And I says to him, he had the name of Tony, you know, Tony. Like I said, that's what they call him, Uncle Tony or that. I says, Tony, how big is this disco era in there? He says, are you kidding? That is just, he says, in his broken English, he says, it is still huge. And they didn't get, that country didn't really get as much disco in the 70s until the mid 80s.
Really?
It changed over. So I did this wedding in the mid 80s, and it was very, very popular. That's why they wanted their home type music.
Wow.
They wanted to hear that music to make them feel so nice to them. In fact, their first dance was How Deep Is Your Love. Okay, their first dance was How Deep Is Your Love, and the song which was their was a family dance was Yvonne Elliman, If I Can't Have You.
Okay,
also from that. So they had a lot of that music that they wanted, and their last dance was We Are Family.
Okay.
Which is still a huge song now, you know. But yeah.
So you think the most dancing, I know you probably have to come up with a break soon, but when you play disco music, is that the most dancing song or more, or if you play like long time waltzes or something, are they more dance, like you'll get more people out dancing?
You'll get more people on the floor. You get more of the older people on the floor.
If it's like a waltz or something?
No, when the disco. If you play more of the dance music or the disco music, depending on the age, of course, or the older people, you know, I'm talking about, you know, people in our age, you'll hear the disco and they'll go crazy on the floor. 2 weeks ago, I had a same-sex couple. They came out, and both ladies came out. And in fact, they said, can you play about 50% more disco because they enjoyed it. I'm like, great, not a problem.
Yeah.
And then last week, boom, same thing. I played them. But it depends on the crowd. You know, some couples will say, I don't want any disco. Okay. Tomorrow's wedding, they don't care what I play. As long as I don't play the chicken dance, that's it. They're done. they don't want it. But I tell you one thing, there is a great chicken dance, a Portuguese, original Portuguese chicken dance that they do want, and they're not Portuguese, but they wanted
want that one.
They want a Portuguese version, which it's faster.
What's that other one that came out maybe 20 years ago, the line dance there with everyone's...
is it the Macarena?
Yeah. Do you ever play that?
That's what the Macarena.
Is that pretty much gone by the?
That's starting to go away. The electric slide is still huge.
Okay, actually, the electric slide was the one actually.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
now
the
it's the Cupid Shuffle and which came out about 5 years ago, and that's still huge.
So the electric slide is still
pretty popular. Yeah, surprisingly,
that's the one I was thinking of.
Macarena. Days are gone that I don't very very. I probably every 2 years maybe an older couple maybe if doing a 50th anniversary, they'll ask for the Hully Gully.
Okay.
But it's probably been about 30 years that I played the Alley Cat.
Wow.
Now that's going back. The cha-cha is still popular with the older ladies.
Yeah.
Very still popular with that one.
Interesting. Wow.
So what else do you have on your schedule, on your paperwork?
Well, I was going to mention actually the Tides, because this is a big, obviously, Friday and the weekend. The Tides, late morning high tides at your favorite South Coast beach, and the weather really should cooperate. It's not going to be blistering hot. Obviously, it usually isn't at the coast anyway, but the humidity levels will be tolerable. And again, if you get to the beach, say at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, say tomorrow or Sunday, you'll get to enjoy a good dose of sunshine. A little bit of a change later Saturday afternoon or evening with a shower. But again, the tides right around 10 o'clock will be high. So it's a really good beach weekend, especially so if you get there early.
Yeah, no, I know Paul's coming up in just a couple of minutes, so we do have a little bit of time. We got about a minute or so left here. You actually are going to be calling in with another forecast tomorrow morning with Elaine, when Elaine called in early this morning. So
yeah, a little earlier because she's got a couple of guests, I guess, so
yeah.
Be on about 7:15 with her,
mm-hmm.
And it'll be kind of quicker than usual, but hopefully get, again, talking about some good weather stuff. The other thing was that I wanted to mention, again, that anniversary, I'll never forget, though, 40 years ago this Sunday, August 2nd, 1975, and if some of you might remember it, I mean, it was the hottest day. It was a Saturday. It was called Hot Saturday in annals, and 104 in Providence that day. So,
jeez.
Real blistering day.
Jeez, I'll tell you. All right, we're just getting ready to get out of here. Paul is coming your way next. I just want to just quickly say this is AM 1320, WARA Attleboro. It is just about 10 o'clock. That's the reason I wanted to say that, because we had a phone call up there, and now they're not there anymore. All right. I'm going to be hanging around for a little bit longer with Jim and Paul.